sorry to keep you waiting, man. Riley has a cold, and it's just very hard to get him to sleep. And he was at like a toddler group the other day, and he's come back now, and he's got a bit of sniffles, you know.
That's okay. Toddler group, Jesus.
Or I guess it's not a toddler. He's not a toddler. Although I guess he's fucking not a baby anymore either. Like, you know, he's crawling, and he's like, he's not like that. That phase of them being a tiny little blob, helpless blob, is really short. I could have done with another few months of that, you know.
It'd be nice if, you know, they were like that until 18, and then they were a fully grown man.
A tash and everything.
Yeah. You wake up on your 18th birthday looking like Tom Selleck.
This is good stuff. I'm glad I hit record. I missed me talking about the Beatles thing, but apart from that, it's all here. Should we start?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Don't forget that you twiddling your mic thing like that makes a fart noise.
Okay. Sorry. I'm also chawing jelly, Stan.
That's why you're flipping it up and down. Yeah, I know.
It's very much a pick your poison. Yeah.
Just do your chawing while I'm talking, and I can cut it out then in the edit.
Good idea.
Do you know, if I was listening to this podcast, I would have turned it off after that.
I do apologize. Yeah, if anybody listens, I don't know why people don't turn this podcast off. I kind of like that about it.
In what's, we'll just introduce each other and then we'll jump into that. So we're well into the thick of it here on this edition of the Swap Meet podcast. My name is Danny O'Hanlon.
My name is Niall McCann.
And you like that people don't turn it off? What do you mean?
We're not chasing algorithms here, Dan.
No, no.
One thing nobody could accuse us of is chasing algorithms.
No, that's true. If we were, we'd have more listeners.
Yeah, but fuck the listeners. Who gives a fuck?
Well, there's one. I got nice feedback from a guy I've mentioned a few times on the show, Giles Brody, messaged me today and said we kept him company on a journey from St. John's Wood in London to Knock Airport here. For that whole stretch of time, he was listening to episodes of Swap Meet.
Two different worlds, huh?
Yeah, true. But so
remember Chrissy Moore had that song about Knock Airport? That was good. That was a good airport. It was a good song, rather.
Oh, it's one of his best airports, I think.
Yeah.
That's an airport now I've been singing for many years now. Did you watch the Christie documentary that was on RTE this year?
No, was it good?
There was some good performances in it, but I got the impression watching it that they were... I didn't just get the impression. I know for a fact they were halfway through making it when coronavirus hit. And I think they just never finished it, and they just kind of put out what they had. It wasn't the finished article at all, but some Christie is better than no Christie.
I suppose. What's he at these days?
He did a lot of live streaming during the pandemic, and I think he is back on the road, yeah.
Did he? Fair play, Christie. He was talking about retiring a while back, wasn't he? Ages ago now.
Maybe the last 2 years were going to be the last hurrah. Maybe he had a tour planned, like a farewell tour, and maybe just
like Elton John.
Like Elton John, yeah. Well, the documentary was interesting in a couple of ways. Like, they were interviewing, is it Declan Sinnott who's his male bloke, his main bloke that plays with him, or is it Donal Lunny? I can never remember. The guitar player, the guy with the tash, he's a fucking fantastic guitar player. He's either Donal Lunny or Declan Sinnott, I'm not sure.
I think the tash guy is Declan Sinnott.
That's Declan Sinnott. But he was saying
I get the two confused.
Sorry. He was made a joke that every 5 years he manages to teach Christie a new chord. Because he was saying, like, you know, like, look, Christie works, he'll tell you this himself, he knows maybe seven or eight chords, and he's just squeezed the whole career out of those, like, you know.
Sometimes that's all you need.
You're a guitar player, Niall. You might get this. So he plays G in a fucked up way. So basically what he does is, and apparently this is because they had to do some sort of major retuning on his guitar because he can't play F. You know the chord F where you kind of have to use two fingers?
Yeah.
One finger covering two strings. Christie can't do it.
Yeah, I can do F. Does that mean I'm better than Christie Moore?
It means that you can play F and he can't.
I'm better than Christie Moore.
But basically, they had to... So what Christie does is he plays his guitar with a... It's tuned down a step. So he puts a capo on the first fret and he plays a C. And it's not a C sharp, it's a C because he's tuned down half a step. Except for his top string, which stays. So that then he can play F with four fingers. And then have the top string be F with his capo on. It's a really awkward way to do it, but... It's basically because Christie can't play F. I'm not fucking saying anything about him. He's Christy Moore. As far as I'm concerned, he's Ireland's Johnny Cash, you know. But that's just one thing he can't do. It's crazy that to me that that's how he plays guitar. That's how he just, that's his, the tuning he's in all the time. Like, if you hit a wrong chord with that tuning, it's going to sound really fucking wonky.
I bet if I tried to play his guitar, it would be monstrous to try and learn his guitar.
Yeah, it would. You'd have to keep remembering that the top string is half a step higher than it would be on anybody else's guitar on the planet.
Surely it would just be easier to learn to play F.
You would think this, but I mean, he's been doing it for, you know, whatever, 170,000 years or whatever he's been playing. Like, you know, so it's, you know, he's made peace with the fact that his top string is F, you know, and the rest of his guitar is an E.
Can he play B? That's a tough chord.
The B7th.
No, you know the one with the three fingers and then the one finger away wide from the rest of it?
Yeah, that's B7th, yeah. I remember reading a thing where Paul McCartney was talking, and he said that when they were kids in Liverpool, like, they just had E and A, and I think they knew D. And so they heard, but they got wind of a fella the other way, at the other side of the city, that knew B7. So they got on a bus and went out to his house, knocked on his front door. Oh, could you show us B7? And, you know, his mother had to get him up from the dinner table, and he went and got his guitar and showed them B7. And Paul was like, it was like the missing piece of the puzzle. We knew fucking B7, because apparently it's in a load of like Buddy Holly songs and stuff. Can you imagine? What a different time.
Speaking of different times, what we swapped this week evoked a different time, Dan.
Before we get into all that, Niall, just in general, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dan. Yeah, I'm doing good.
I was thinking about you today because literally on my windowsill at the minute, as a sort of follow-on of what we were talking about last week, there's a cup of dripping.
No, there isn't. Did you start catching your dripping?
Well, basically, we've got this cast iron skillet that we got a while ago. To keep it in good nick, what you have to do is you have to clean it as soon as you're finished using it. And I'd been cooking burgers.
Yeah.
So instead of tackling a load of grease with a paper towel or whatever in hot water, I tipped all the fat out first into a cup.
Yeah.
So, ergo, I have a cup of dripping on the windowsill. And I'm thinking of maybe getting started with a cup of dripping.
Listen, that would bring me, that'd bring me straight back to my childhood. That'd bring me back before Oasis. I thought those cast iron skillets, you had to keep them a little bit greasy.
You do, but you do it, you season them with oil. So you season it with, you know, your oil of choice. Apparently you're not supposed to use olive oil, but it's what we have in the house. So that's what I use. But yeah,
you could use dripping.
I suppose you could, but you're supposed to, see, you clean it and then you season it with the oil. Now the dripping could go back in as long as I cleaned it then after the next use, you know. It's a hell of a pan. Gets very hot on a very low heat on the cooker.
I made stew last week. It wasn't proper stew. It was chicken thighs on the bone with chorizo.
Oh, you were saying this last week. Yeah, you're.
Oh, did I say it?
You're an on the bone. No, you didn't say you made stew, but you said you were an on the bone kind of fella.
I must have just been thinking of nothing but the chicken then after that, because I went out and got a load of chicken thighs and made stew. Anyway, Oasis, Dan. Supersonic.
So I was caught on the hop last week when it came time to swap something, and I was desperately looking around the room, and the Supersonic Blu-ray was on the shelf, and I was like, oh, Supersonic, forgetting I don't have a Blu-ray player, so I had to go and get it. But luckily some enterprising soul has put it all up on YouTube for nothing, so thank you very much, because I'd already paid to see it in the cinema. And I bought the Blu-ray, and I was like, God, am I really going to pay for this film for a third time? I very nearly did, and I thought, I'll just do a search just in case. But I was actually kind of regretting picking it. I thought it was kind of an obvious pick, but it seems that you've sparked to it a little bit.
Yeah.
Supersonic is the documentary Oasis up until Nebworth. Now, the Nebworth documentary is out at the minute, or I haven't seen it, but it's out at the minute.
Oh, so we kind of are chasing the algorithm this week.
In a way, we were, I suppose.
It's purely coincidental. They're really, people have to believe it's purely coincidental for us. Because by Jesus, if we haven't proved we don't chase algorithms at this stage, what do we have to do? Who was calling out for the family way?
My Blue Heaven. Now, 3 years,
Oasis will have gone from being a new signing to one of rock's true giants.
What happened to you in those 3 years? So it's a big question.
It is a big question, and it deserves a big answer. We're just lads from a council estate. Two brothers.
No, it's the funny farm.
Ed cases.
Come on, you bald nutter!
Nobody had heard of us,
but we had spirit.
We never gave up. One night, everything changed.
There is a story about you getting signed to Creation. Alan McGee saw you in the club, is that right?
I did, yeah. He signed us there and then on the spot.
No one had ever come along that was even remotely like us.
Their debut album is already the classic of our time.
Then it just blew up.
The most popular rock and roll band in Britain today.
Oasis were involved in a drunken brawl.
Immediately condemned by politicians.
The day that it steps over into the tabloids, then you've gone to the dark side.
Trouble seemed to find us.
It all happened too quick.
Oasis was like a Ferrari. Great to look at, great to drive, and it'll fucking spin out of control every now and again.
Oasis's greatest strength was me and Liam. It's also what drove the band into the ground in the end.
Give it up for Oasis.
One of the biggest bands since the Beatles.
It just caught fire
all over the world.
It was just a great time to be alive.
I didn't love it. The whole way through, I kind of didn't love it. It was grand. It was kind of like an interesting music documentary. And then at the end, I kind of really did come to love it a wee bit.
If you're unfamiliar, Oasis, big Britpop band in the 90s. You might have heard of them.
Yeah.
Definitely Maybe album came out, did gangbusters. And then What's the Story, Morning Glory with Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, etc.
What's the Story, Morning Glory?
Did big business and was big in America and all that kind of stuff. And then they got a booking to do these two massive gigs in Nebworth. Liam's doing them again next year, apparently.
Oh, good. That should go well.
Proving that he is absolutely a man stuck in a fucking time warp altogether.
It's because he's still fucking surrounded by 19-year-old chavs.
It would be a bit like when I was younger, being into like who would be a band from the 80s that were kind of still going at
the,
like, 80s? The Pixies or someone. I suppose. Oh, it would be 20 years back, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it'd be more like the 70s.
Yeah, it'd be like the Bay City Rollers if you were bopping along in the 90s to the Bay City Rollers.
Well, then who would have been our Liam Gallagher then? Like, I know Liam Gallagher was our Liam Gallagher, but who would have been our 2021 Liam Gallagher back in 1996, who was still going at that point from the 70s, who kids were kind of still into?
Tom Petty? You hated him at the time, but he was big.
That's true. Maybe Tom Petty or Neil Young, I guess, because Neil Young kind of rode that grunge wave. The grunge people loved Neil Young.
Cobain loved him, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he quoted him in his suicide note.
Did he? What did he say?
Better to burn out than to fade away. One of the dumb, like, even, look, that line sounds great in a song. Neil Young doesn't believe that.
No, he doesn't.
And I'm sure it brings him no fucking solace to know that it was in this poor guy's suicide note, but whatever, you know.
I was given a niece of mine a lift. Oh, this is now a couple of years ago. She would have been 14. And I was giving her a lift. I was giving her a lift up to Dublin. I was listening to a podcast on the radio when I picked her up. And I was like, you can change that. You can put it on the radio if you like. And she was like, okay, cool. And we put it on the radio. And I was like, I don't. And eventually, halfway up the road, I was like, I don't know any of these songs. Who are these people on this radio station? And she looked at me and she goes, are you serious? That's Avicii. He's a legend. And he died when he was 27. And there's a whole conspiracy about people who died when they were 27.
So now I can't hear Avicii without thinking,
he's a legend.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. So that's fine by me. So wake me up when it's all over.
Sounds like something you would sprinkle on top of a dessert. Come here, yo, look at all that Avicii. There's more Avicii than cake in that player.
Oh, that Avicii's too sweet for me. That's what everyone in my family says about cake. Oh, it's too sweet. No, I couldn't eat that. It's just like, then why'd you buy a cake? For fuck's sake.
I'm not a big cake guy, I have.
No, me neither, but that's why I don't buy it. So after I realized the DVD wasn't going to work, I wasn't going to bother watching it again because I thought, God, I've watched this maybe 12 times. I'm sure I'm well enough versed in it now to do this podcast, but I did watch it again. I have mixed feelings about it, watching it back, but I want to hear what you thought. You said at the start you weren't really into it.
For about I would say for about, like, it's about 2 hours long. I would say about an hour and a quarter of it, I thought, yeah, it was kind of an interesting sort of music documentary, but I really think they could probably have done all this in three quarters of an hour for BBC Four or something. And then the last three quarters got very good, got very fascinating.
So what changed?
There was one moment in it that I thought, now, if that doesn't sum up Oasis, what does? What would sum up Oasis? When the replacement, was it the replacement bass player they get to go to New York, has a conniption on Scott the way McLeod, to Letterman?
Yeah.
Scott McLeod. He's also a very, very well-respected comic book artist, Scott McLeod. I doubt it's the same Scott McLeod.
The guy, this guy who was in Oasis just for that amount of time, he's in the video for Wonderwall. Like, he's immortalized in that video. He was in the band for a week or something, like, you know.
It was mental. But when they were telling the story, he was like, I just miss me bird. I just miss me bird. The other members is Nolan Liam, basically sort of recalling the story.
We were on the way to New York to do David Letterman. Maggie, our tour manager, God bless that woman, we put her through absolute fucking hell. She came in kind of half laughing, going, you'll never guess what's just happened. Scott's just told me he wants to, like, quit. And I remember going to the back lounge and saying to him, mate, what? And he said these words, I'm just missing me bird. You know, there's people that are cut out for it and there's people that ain't. But he might have just gone, you know what? This is not for me. It's either that or his bird must have been fit as fuck, you know what I mean? I always take things like that. I would always laugh my way through it and think, even, you know, as you're driving into America to do David Letterman and the bass player that's standing in for the bass player who's got nervous exhaustion is saying, I can't handle it anymore. We're laughing going, we must be the biggest bunch of cunts in the world because our mate is fucking sat at home watching the cricket. He don't want to be in a band with us. This fucking clown here, who's on the dole in England, he don't want to be in a band. I mean, are we like the biggest three cunts in the world? It didn't deter us.
Liam couldn't help but go to this really sort of puerile, stupid adolescent place, and Noel couldn't help but turn the eye wryly inward. And I thought, oh, that's them.
Well, what's the line? It's Liam's a cat, or Liam's a dog, and Noel's a cat.
Yeah.
I'm a cat. I'm a bit of a bastard.
And they were kind of bastards. I forgot how ladsy that whole 90s culture was. It was very ladsy.
This is what I was going to say. Like, I actually am a little bit annoyed at my 14, 15-year-old self for fucking worshipping these guys so much. And it's more to do with Oasis fandom these days. Now, this documentary was fucking made for me. Like, I was really chomping, like, the same way I'm chomping at the bit now to see this Peter Jackson Beatles thing. I just watched the trailer for it like five times while I was waiting on you to come on the thing. It looks fucking great. It looks like he hasn't just gone with a sort of cuddly version of it. He's left in some of the difficult stuff, which is great. Yeah, the Supersonic documentary, I would not have thought there was that much footage of those guys. Because even Noel said it, like, he said to the director, he was like, yeah, crack on and make the film. But I'm telling you, there's no footage of us. No one had any video cameras. Obviously, there was no phones or anything like that. Mm. We didn't carry video cameras around. There's nothing. And he was like, I couldn't believe how much footage of us there was, like, backstage and all this kind of stuff. And some of it is really good. The footage of them rehearsing, like, they do a really good thing at the end, at the start and end of the film, is that they cut from them playing Columbia at Nebworth. And then it cuts to them playing it in a rehearsal room like 3 years earlier. And it's just like, holy fuck, when you think of the distance, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, different world.
But yeah, it was really ladsy. And the thing is as well is that the scope of influence was so narrow. Like, they were just, there's musical biases I still have to this day because I was an Oasis fan in the 90s. And I thought, oh, well, keyboards are stupid. If you're playing a keyboard, then your stuff is shit. If you're doing this, then your stuff is shit. If you're, you know, if you're American, your stuff is shit.
If you're Phil Collins, your stuff is shit.
And I know for a fact that Phil Collins is on record as going, I don't know what I did to this guy.
They're rude, not as talented as they think they are. Mm. Well, they actually, I mean, I won't mince words here, but I mean, they've had a go at me personally. Mm-hmm. And I...
Well, you say he's had a go at you. I mean, he did recently say, I'm sure you're probably aware of this quote, that during the last election, he said, everybody must vote Labour because if you vote Conservative, Phil Collins will come back and live in Britain.
Yeah, well, he was quoting something that was said way back. Everybody assumes that I'm a Conservative, you see, because I've got a lot of money. Mm. But I'm not a conservative at all, never have been. But he was using the fact that I'd gone to Switzerland, you got to Switzerland, must be taxed, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But they keep having a go at me, which is I find strange. I mean,
yes.
I seem to embody...
Do you think this programme would do anything to heal the grift?
I personify all that. He's actually called me the Antichrist of music.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, do you remember him getting the award off Mick Hucknall?
It wasn't Mick Hucknall, it was Michael Hutchins.
Oh, was it?
Even a worse thing to say and a worse outcome, you know.
How soon after that did he die?
I don't know the time, but like to be told on a televised awards show that you're a has-been can't do much for whatever turmoil you're already going through, you know.
Yeah, it was obnoxious. It was an obnoxious thing to do.
It's needless, like.
It was needless. Also, what age was he like?
Well, yeah, I suppose he was 28 or 9, maybe, like...
Oh, that's old. That's pretty
yeah,
old.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah. He wasn't a kid. Like, he's older than Liam, you know?
Oh, was it Noel that said it?
It was Noel that said it, yeah.
Oh, shit. I had in my head it was Liam.
I'm sure Liam didn't even know who he was. Like, you know, Liam doesn't know much outside of Liam, you know?
Yeah. Liam was, I would say, up to his chin in Patsy Cans at about that stage. So who could blame him?
Wait, Dan? Which way is he going in?
Whichever way. Whichever way, you wouldn't be in a hurry out, Dan.
The early footage and all that was great. I thought it was brilliant. And the old clips of like what they sounded like before Noel was in the band and before they wrote all those songs. Like there's this a clip of them doing a song called Take Me.
Take me when I'm young and true. Was it me?
Tuneless fucking dirge, and you're just like, holy Jesus, like they could have just been nothing. They could have just been another like Stone Roses wannabe band that faded after a year, you know.
Well, he was a Stone Roses wannabe, wasn't he? Didn't he say that?
Yeah,
first band he ever saw that made him think I could do that.
So like the Stone Roses aren't anywhere near being my favorite band or anything, but they're interesting guys. Like Ian Brown will use a song like, or use a word like brigantine in a song and
right.
Not be worried that people might think he was a posh boy or a whatever, like, you know, a fucking bookworm or something, you know. Whereas I feel like Oasis took these very surfacey elements of these bands and made them into this kind of laddish thing, you know.
Isn't it always the working class guys that try to sound middle class?
Yeah, but I don't think Oasis did that. I think
no, they didn't. No, they absolutely. But doesn't that make them in some way somehow more authentic?
But I think this business about authenticity and working class authenticity just fucking held them back in terms of like artistic development, you know. I'm getting all over the place here. Looking back, it just made me question the whole thing.
Looking back over my shoulder. Who sang that?
Is it Michael Jackson? Is that Human Nature?
Yeah, probably is. What did the lads make of Michael Jackson? Did they ever talk about Michael?
Noel's mentioned Michael Jackson since. Noel is very much he's more willing to talk about those kind of influences now than he was then. But for kids like me, I wish he had talked about that stuff back then, because maybe I would have gone and listened to, well, I knew Michael Jackson already.
This obscure Motown figure, Michael Jackson. Yeah. Maybe Michael Jackson was our Liam Gallagher.
Oh, good shout. Yeah, it probably was Michael Jackson. It's probably the only way you could compare the two.
Yeah, in fairness, that's true. What I found very interesting, you're right, the stuff with her father towards the end was very interesting. I found that sort of moment where Noel's really, he says like Nebworth we were like sort of rock stars, we were being inducted into rock stardom, like this was how we proved we were here and we'd arrived, but it felt more like an ending to him, he says. And I thought, well, oh, that's really interesting, he said. And it kind of was overall, because that'll never happen again
except for next year when Liam does it.
Well, maybe, yeah, but it won't be the same thing. He made the point. It was like, because that was just like immediately a split second before the internet came and everybody had access to all the music they wanted and all the influences. And it just something that gripped the culture that strongly. It is hard to imagine anything achieving something like that.
He's getting great mileage out of this kind of chat now with the Nebworth documentary coming out. But I don't think of 1996 as the 2 seconds before the internet. It was a long time before I had any kind of internet access after that, you know?
Maybe. Like, I remember.
You could say the same thing about, sorry to interrupt you, but you could say the same thing about the Glastonbury the following year, where Radiohead were doing all this, the first sort of live performances of songs off OK Computer. You know, like, you could say that was a pretty big thing for, because he's getting great mileage out of this, the last great youth culture movement. There's been nothing like that since. And it's like, I don't know, you're 57, man. Maybe you're just not the person in the loop that knows about these things, you know.
Well, what is the current great youth culture movement?
But how would I know?
Oh, come on, Dan. You're telling me nobody, no 40-year-old had ever knew about Oasis in the 90s.
Yeah, but the thing is, they weren't, I don't think they were the only a youth culture movement. My dad loved Oasis because they sounded like all the bands he loved when he was a kid. They weren't just the youth culture thing. They were, the dads loved them.
Mm-hmm. But does that not make his point more? Have you watched Squid Game yet? Like, is that what we're going to say is the great culture movement of the moment? Fucking Squid Game?
But this is the thing, man. It's not up to us what that is. God only knows what it is. It's probably someone on TikTok doing stuff, you know?
I get you. I get what you're saying. It's not up to us. But you couldn't ignore Oasis. And I'm quite, if that big movement is happening, I can happily ignore it. I don't even know it's there, Dan. A 40-year-old in 1996 couldn't say that about Oasis. Like, it probably is TikTok. You're right that it probably is TikTok.
I mean, what about someone like Billie Eilish? Like, she's doing Glastonbury next year. I feel like she is doing something similar at the minute.
Maybe. I haven't a fucking clue, is the God's honest truth. Now, it might be that I'm just very fucking oblivious.
I feel like she's kind of like Liam in that she influences how people dress and how people think. And, you know, I feel like she's kind of a figure like that, you know. And she's doing, like, Glastonbury next year is going to be a big gathering. Like, you know, that's a pretty big place for her to play.
Do you remember when Noel was, when they were talking about Noel, they were asking about Liam and he was like, it sounded like he was trying to be magnanimous about Liam, where he's like,
Liam clearly would have liked to have had my talent as a songwriter. And there's not a day go by where I don't wish I could rock a parka like that man.
What is the story with these parkas? Like, why are they just coats? Like, that's always, yeah. I always find that as a sort of an odd part of the whole mod thing that Oasis carried on as well. Coats. Big coats being like a fashion thing.
Well, they were everybody. I don't think we'd call them parkas here. They're just anoraks here, aren't they?
Yeah, or like duffel coats or whatever, aren't they? That's not a parka, is it? They're a little lighter. Like, a duffel coat is like, I was a duffel coat wearing fella for a few years. It's a bit like wearing a big sponge.
It wasn't there. There was anoraks. Like, I remember having anoraks when I was a kid. Everybody had anoraks. It's not like he went away to the fucking, you know,
the
Riviera. No, but it's not like Liam went away to Milan Fashion Week and came back with some kind of hat made out of plastic. Like, it was, they were parkas. Everybody wore, everybody had anoraks. It's the winter. Put on your anorak.
Put on your Liam Gallagher official anorak.
Liam's fucking mush on the front of it. Zip it up to get the full effect of the skull.
I sound like, do you know what? The problems I have aren't actually with the band. It's just, I'm just realizing the problems I have aren't actually with the band. It's with Oasis, what Oasis fandom has kind of become. It's a lot of 40-year-old dudes on YouTube trying to start movements to get good, honest British guitar rock back in the charts. And you just think, oh, this sounds kind of like Brexit to me. This is Brexit thinking.
Yeah, there's a touch of that. But also, there's nothing wrong with guitar rock. Like,
of course not. No, mate. Look who you're talking to. Well, you can't. You don't have the cameras on. But If you fucking open my vein, a fucking guitar string will pop out of it, like, you know.
Is that Oasis's fan? Is that Oasis fandom, or is Oasis fandom still 19-year-olds in beanie hats?
In terms of Liam Gallagher fandom, is certainly that, and I think it spills over a little bit. But I think if you're one of these people that wants Oasis to get back together, I think the Liam Gallagher version of that is the best version of that you could hope for, to be honest.
What do you mean?
Like, him with a band behind him playing Oasis songs without any of the politics is the best. If you want to have your 90s experience and hear those songs, that's the best way to hear it. Do you really want to see him standing up there with Noel grumpy beside him, fucking picking up a paycheck, just doing the bare amount just to get through these gigs so that they can leave in separate cars? Like, who the fuck wants to see that?
That was an overwhelming feeling for me by the end of the thing. And I wasn't really, like, I was actually too young for this shit at that stage, like, you know? But when I was looking at the thing, I was like, I think I'm just nostalgic for being 19. It's not the same. And there's something to be said for letting kids get away with a certain, not letting them get away with it, but there's something excusable about a kid being obnoxious in a moment that isn't excusable in a 50-year-old man. Like, for them to do Oasis again would be just kind of sad.
I wouldn't be on board with it, personally, because what you see in that documentary is the absolute fucking apex of that band. That's as good as it got. It plateaued for a while and then took a serious nosedive, and then actually the last two albums kind of came back up a little bit. They were, or even that, you could even argue the last three, all those albums have good songs in them, but they were the Rolling Stones or U2 by then. They were like a really big touring band that kids would go and see, but their new stuff was just not, it wasn't catching the same wave as they did earlier. I love what Noel's doing at the minute. I think he's just decided, like, okay, well, I'm like Paul Weller or Johnny Marr or one of these people. I'm just going to keep making my records and playing my gigs. It'll be to a much smaller audience, but, you know, it's going to be my thing, and I'll just keep writing songs and doing my thing. Remember what might have been, had I walked you home, I said I'd see you later. You were living the dream. When the morning comes, you're gonna meet your maker. Good luck in the afterlife. I hear the morning sun doesn't cast no shadow. You chose to drift away, but look at you now. Whereas Liam cannot handle the fact that he's not, you know, cock of the walk anymore. But then again, he sort of is, you know, so.
He's not, is he?
In a certain way, those Liam albums were really big hits. They were, and it kind of got interest back in him as a touring act. And then, of course, once you get Liam Gallagher on a stage and a bunch of drunk people at a festival, you're going to want to hear all the Oasis songs.
It's hard to see a man his age behave like that.
I know, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Am I a cunt for thinking that?
I'm not on board with the Liam solo thing at all. I don't... This isn't really a snobby thing to say or whatever, but I don't really think of him as an artist. He's like these guys, like... You know, like, I'm sure somewhere right now, like, Adam Ant is out on tour, still doing Prince Charming and all these kind of songs. I kind of think of Liam like that. Like, he's sort of... artistically flatlined back in like 1997 or whatever, but he's just keeping this thing alive. He's going out and playing these songs, but I don't know, will he eventually run out of Oasis fans to play to?
They're replenishing, because yeah. Dan, a 16 or 17 year old boy, will, they're not going to see it the way they will see it when they're 40.
Yeah,
it's going to be a different thing for them. And I genuinely think people are, you know, I think people are a bit too precious about stuff now. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a 16 or 17 year old to be a little bit stupid sometimes. In fact, I think it might be a wee bit necessary. I wouldn't begrudge them that. Like, and I suppose I can't really begrudge Liam that either, but it wouldn't be for me. Like,
were you a fan back in the day, or did you care? Did you like a couple of songs?
Really, overly. I liked a couple of songs. They were good. Like you say, you could listen to them. Like, they weren't tough to listen to. They were very accessible.
It could be noisy and rocky by times, but it was melodic, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Like, I was obsessed. Like, they were like my first big favorite band after like being, like, as a kid, being really into U2. As I thought the Edge in a fucking cowboy hat was like the coolest thing going. Because we got my dad really liked U2, and we had the Rattlin' Hum video.
Oh, yeah.
What year would that be? 1989? So I guess I was like 7.
Like, everybody has a little Liam Gallagher on one shoulder and a little Bono on the other, whispering in their ear.
Yeah, yeah.
You do what Liam tells you, you have a great time. You do what Bono tells you, you go to heaven.
But I thought the Edge was the coolest person on the planet. And then that transferred over to thinking that Noel Gallagher and John Lennon were the coolest people on the planet, or, you know, in the... You know, John Lennon wasn't on the planet at that point, but, you know, I was obsessed with Oasis, obsessed with Noel Gallagher, like, especially Noel. Like, I would, like, that was the back in the days of Rhythm Records in Temple Bar in Dublin, where you could buy all the bootleg tapes of, like, radio sessions of Noel. Oh, he's doing an acoustic, Live Forever, I have to have that, you know, this kind of stuff, you know.
Noel has only gotten cooler. Am I wrong to say that?
Well, there was the whole anti-vax thing last year, but I've kind of forgiven him. That's fair enough. Like, I was a little bit too anti-vax.
You know what? If you really think it's better for people that they get vaccinated, arguing with them's not going to fix anything. Like,
it was a little bit of a fucking millionaire telling us that we were all idiots, but I'm over it. It's fine. Me and Noel are all right.
Yeah. But Dan, even back then, he had a more serious head than the rest of them, didn't he? He got rid of, what's his name, Tony McCarroll. He seemed to be pretty ruthless.
That was hard to watch, yeah. And like, but he's honest about it. Like, he's like, so for anyone who doesn't know, the original drummer, Tony McCarroll, was ousted pretty early on after the first album. They say that Noel just had an in for him from the start and just wanted him out. Like, and apparently one of the main reasons was because he had curly hair, which I took umbrage with.
Well, curly hair wasn't going to work well with those Oasis dudes.
In a not a very gentle way, he was pretty much told he was shit. He was pretty much told he was shit the whole way through his career, and then eventually he was just finally fired.
I will say, though, I didn't get an enormous amount of bullshit from Noel about it. He seemed pretty honest. He was like, yeah, look, whatever he said I did, probably I did it.
Tony McCarroll just would not have been able to play Wonderwall. He just would not have been able to play it.
About you now.
Alan White's, when you listen to the drums on Wonderwall, you just think, oh, it was absolutely the right move. Because literally, poor Tony McCarroll can only really play that one beat, that beat that's in Live Forever and Supersonic. Like, and it's funny, both of those songs start with the drums, you know. And like, that's really all he could do was those two. Which is, look, he's just a bloke from Manchester. He wasn't fucking, you know, he wasn't a genius. He was just a fella who had a band with a few mates. Like, you know, I'm sure they didn't think it was going to go the way it went and get so big, where all of a sudden everyone's kind of under the magnifying glass, you know?
Because Noel was kind of in that world, wasn't he? He was like roadie for the Inspiral Carpets. And
this is how it feels to be lonely. This is how it feels to be small.
The only reason I've even heard of the Inspiral Carpets is that Tommy and Hector from the Tommy and Hector and Lurita podcast fucking love them. Well, I remember at one stage Tommy and Hector talking about how they lived on the dole on Achill Island, going down and smoking the heads of themselves on the beach, listening to the Inspiral Carpets.
Those two lads had the life. I miss my dole years. I was always working.
I would have been 11, though.
Yeah.
So really, it would have been more of a babysitting situation.
I didn't really get my dole experience until I was like 34 or something. And by that point, it was just a bit sad.
God bless the depression.
Not that there's anything wrong with being on the dole, but I think I would have gotten an awful lot more out of it when I was 22, you know.
I was something of an invert, Dan. Yeah, I kind of had my adolescence in my 30s, for better or worse.
In a good way?
No, I don't think it's good to have your adolescence in your 30s. That said, I think it might be better than not having your adolescence at all.
Yeah. What was teenage Niall like? Was he too serious?
Yeah, he was way too serious. He should have been fucking listening to more Oasis, really.
You lightened up in the amount of time we were at college, for sure. You were pretty intense when we first met.
Yeah, no, maybe it was. I should have loosened up significantly earlier. But sure, look, it was just... I think if you were to look at that and say, oh, it was ladsy, how terrible. You have to learn to lighten up. It would have been better for me if I had been a bit more ladsy at that age.
I mean, you were still you. I mean, you were still like funny and you were good crack and you were into your films and all that. You were like, yeah, you were a good lad.
I'm not I'm not fishing for anything. I'm just trying to think. I'm just trying to think out loud about this shit. He obviously wasn't that, Noel. Now, he was a bit older than the other lads. And he obviously had a bit more nouse about him than just that sort of attitude. And, we're just on a council estate. Although he keeps fucking saying it.
The working class thing is very important to Noel, to the point where it's just a little bit, so if you're not working class, you can't be any good. Like, John Lennon wasn't working class and you fucking worship the shit out of him. Like, you know, this is something that kind of gets me about in the 90s, the touting of the Beatles as this big influence on everybody. And the thing is, Oasis talked about being influenced by the Beatles, but I think they took a very surfacey influence from the Beatles.
Hairdos.
I mean, yeah, the hairdos. I'm in a very Beatly frame of mind at the minute, just with this documentary coming out, and I've been listening to podcasts and things.
That's what the world needs. Another Beatles documentary. Maybe we haven't raked over that grave enough.
That's what I need, man. I'm fucking, I can't wait.
That's allowed. We probably don't need another Dune, and I can't wait for that.
The thing with the Beatles, though, was like, even if you just take John Lennon and Paul McCartney, their influences were sort of Buddy Holly stuff, but also like American black girl bands. Like the biggest influence on the early Beatles was like, you know, those kind of girl groups like the Shirelles and the Ronettes and these kind, they do so many of those songs. Please, Mr. Postman and all that. Like, but also the thing is with John Lennon and Paul McCartney, like they were both like open to stuff. They were interested in like culture. They were interested in reading and they tried to write a play at one point when they were very young and all this kind of stuff. They were just two really open blokes. Like, you know, whereas I don't, like, you couldn't describe back then Liam and Noel Gallagher as being culturally open people. They did one, they did that one thing really well. And it ran out of steam really quickly because there wasn't very much to it. Like, you know, they mined great depth out of it. Like, you know, I know I was saying a few weeks ago that they didn't on this podcast, but when you listen to like Live Forever and all this, like Noel tapped into this thing that was like part sort of football songs, part acid house, part rock and roll, part this, part that. And with a fucking truckload of euphoria, like, and optimism. And just made this sound.
And crystal meth, apparently.
That's a really good little bit of film of them playing the worst gig of all time at the Whiskey A Go-Go.
Right, LA! Whiskey A Go-Go! This This is the spot. The best band in Britain. I say we're the best band in the universe. None other than Oasis.
All right, Oasis.
I love it.
This one's called Rock and Roll Star.
Everyone was appalling. Every member of the crew, every member of the fucking band, because of crystal meth.
Phil Smith, our roadie, was responsible for putting the set lists out. For some reason, my set list was different to everybody else's.
They were all playing different songs at the same time. Whoa, what's going on here?
It was a shambles, man. It was an absolute fucking shambles.
It was shortly after that documentary, there was a solo Liam documentary. And now there's the Nebworth fucking documentary. Right. They're just going to documentary all these things to death. Like, you know, says he who was fucking dribbling at the thought of the Peter Jackson thing. Oh, that was my point. They're going, yeah. So I really object to the Beatles being touted as an influence by all these kind of fairly two-dimensional bands. Now, Noel Gallagher has proved since that he's not two-dimensional, but the Oasis fandom people that I was talking about that are like, get British guitar rock and roll back in the charts, man, and all that. The last person that you would hear say anything along those lines is fucking Paul McCartney. That's a man who's like into what he's doing. He's into what other people are doing. He's not into just everything being the same all the time. And, oh, it should be back like it was in the 60s again. Like, Paul McCartney's the last person on earth who will say that.
Lovely man, Danny. He's a lovely man.
I don't know. I've just got a real chip on my shoulder about some of these YouTubers.
You shouldn't have a chip on your shoulder, but they really shouldn't have the chip on their shoulder either. I don't. It's just so pointless. Did you hear Superman's bisexual now?
Do you have anything to say about that, or do you give a shit? Like,
somebody was pointing it out who was a bit upset about it, or seemed a bit upset about it. But I don't know John Kent, so I don't know, because they gave Superman back to Dan Jurgens because they think Dan Jurgens is the greatest Superman creator. But the truth is, he's just the one who's been around on him the longest. And I fucking hate his Superman. And I really wish they would do a proper Superman and stop following the Dan Jurgens path. But they gave him back to Dan Jurgens and he had this whole Superman family thing. And maybe it's brilliant. Maybe it's brilliant. I have no interest in reading that kind of Dan Jurgens a fight Superman. But if I imagine that it is not this Jonathan Kent character who I don't know, and I imagine that it was my Superman that they were making bisexual, I still don't think I would be that upset. Like, I could see a story where some fucking poor kid is ready to kill himself for something over those kind of feelings. I could see Superman kissing a kid like that. That to me would not be a terribly un-Superman thing to do.
Yeah, he's very like Paul McCartney in that way.
Superman is basically superhero Paul McCartney. It's like I can't see me getting mad at it, and I can't help but feel a wee bit sort of frustrated by people who would get mad at it. But here's the only other thing I would say: it's the kind of thing that's designed to provoke a reaction. Like, did you watch any of those Marvel Disney programs?
No, I haven't seen any of them. No,
they made Loki bisexual. Now, by that I mean he has one line in fucking 8 hours or whatever it is of television. He has one line that implies in that he may have occasionally had bisexual or had homosexual encounters. It's a brief line, brief implication, and everybody's whooping and hollering about how wonderfully representative it is. I can't help but feel that that's kind of tokenistic and just designed to provoke a response and really lazy. I don't think that's proper LGBT representation.
Now, I'm speaking as someone who hasn't watched it, but yeah, I mean, just based on what you're saying, I'd be inclined to. I think it would be better with a an LGBT character in there, surely.
I couldn't get mad about it, especially because that character, especially, I think I always would just assume, you know, he'd try fucking it and like, he'd say mass, like, look.
Say mass, is that what you said?
Yeah, he'd say it and he'd say mass. But everybody needs to fucking take a chill pill and realize you're not being represented by that throwaway disposable line. So don't be so fucking enthusiastic about it. And also, that disposable throwaway line is not shoving anything down your throat that you don't want shoved down your throat. Like, I just think everybody needs to calm the fuck down and realize that see it for what it is. Just a piece of random, lazy tokenism. Now, I'm not saying that's what the Superman story is. I don't know that, but I don't get why it's so terribly earth-shaking one way or the other, you know?
Well, this is the word they always use with this thing is, like, when people complain about it, they go, oh, it's preachy. I don't like being preached at, preachy. And I always think, well, what are they preaching? What are they preaching? Where are they preaching? Like, inclusion? Like, you know, that word I have a lot of problems with.
I don't. I think things do have a tendency to be preachy. I think the you know, the great art of subtlety is fucking lost. I don't super feel that that's preachy. Like, that's lazy. If I was a gay person, I would be angrier than that. I'd angrier at that than if I was one of these homophobes that hates. See, I don't want to see gay people. If I was a gay person, I'd be like, no, you fucks did not just try to claim that that is some kind of representation of me.
Well, what people are reacting to at the moment, like, is a panel, though, isn't it? Like, it's not even properly out yet, is it? Like, the actual story. You don't, like, maybe the character of Superman's young lad in the strip discovers things about himself in the course of the story. So maybe it is inclusive. Maybe it is representative.
For all I know, that character is basically walks around like Mr. Humphreys every day of his life, and everybody's just been waiting, like,
oh, from your argument, sir.
I'm free. I just, you know, I have no, I just think getting upset about it one way or the other, either getting excited about it or getting upset about it, is missing the fucking point.
Am I right when I say that there are the guts of 100 years of other Superman stories to choose from if you don't like this one?
1938.
Okay, so about 80 years then.
Yeah, 82, yeah.
When people fucking bitch about Superman, like, and this and that, I just think, why don't you just go back to Action Comics number one? I'm sure you can get a digital version of it and just go from the start and you can read him. Here comes Superman, and you can go right back to all that if you want to. Like, there's no one around to stop you. You can go back to that version of Superman. You can watch the old black and white show. You can listen to the old radio shows. You can go right back to the start of this character when, you know, there was none of this scary, inclusive LGBTQ material in there, and you can live your happy life.
I reserve judgment on whether or not it's inclusive. After Loki claiming to be inclusive because of one line implying something, I would just be very cynical about it.
Rather than trying to build all this into properties that are fucking decades old, maybe it's time to just, and I'm sure people have done it, I'm sure there's independent comics out there that are treating all of this stuff really well. Maybe expecting the big boys to do it is not real, not a realistic expectation.
Anyway, there was no room for that shit in Oasis. I don't think that's reason to condemn Oasis, you know.
I have this thing with Oasis, though. I get super defensive talking about them because it stands for weird things now that I didn't really feel like it stood for back then. But then again, the culture was different and laddish, that kind of, not just laddishness, but that kind of, like, just destructive laddishness.
Ladettishness.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of destructive laddishness was kind of prevalent back then and no one really thought anything of it. But you still had your Damon Albarns and your Jarvis Cockers and these kind of people that were a little bit more enlightened, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, Jesus Christ, you two were huge back then. And Bono's the most goody-two-shoes guy you could ever fucking imagine. Yeah, they were just off Acton Baby, weren't they?
Acton Baby's 1992. So, they would have been around the time of Zooropa. That would have been just before the Zooropa album. Now, not the zoo tour would have been before all this, but the Zooropa album would have came around about this time.
It was huge, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was humongous, yeah.
I don't think you're going to fix anything by trying to stamp that out. I think it would have done me a good if I had not been so fucking snobbish about it when I was 16, 17. I think it would have done me good. But I was snobbish about it, and I paid the price, and there was a price to pay for that. You think I'm joking, but I'm quite serious.
No, I don't think you're joking at all. I just think it's funny that, well, I'm just trying to imagine what the price was. You didn't get to go to Nebworth.
I didn't get to go to Nebworth. I just wish I hadn't been such an asshole for so long.
You weren't. Come on.
No, I was a wee bit now. I was a wee bit.
I don't know about that.
It's like, did you ever hear David Mitchell talking about how the world is built to accommodate reckless children? When you're a child, the world is built to accommodate reckless children because reckless children will do reckless things and die. Whereas he was not a reckless child. So he didn't need signs up around the pool that said, don't run around the pool. The idea of running near the pool terrified me. I could have slipped and cracked my head open. Nobody needed to say, don't look directly at the sun, you'll go blind. If I so much as caught a glimpse of the sun, I think, oh God, that's it. This beginning of eternal darkness.
It's funny you mentioned David Mitchell because at the minute, Rob Brydon does this podcast on Spotify. And this week,
yes, he does, yeah.
Noel Gallagher was on it. He met David Mitchell in the street and said to him, oh, I fucking love, would I lie to you? It's like my favorite thing on television, blah, blah, blah. It was only after David Mitchell walked away and Noel was like, I don't think he knew who I was.
Look, we all live on our kind of... You see, there's another man who I think could have benefited from being a little bit more into Oasis when he was younger.
Maybe. He's done, made an all right fist of things, though, to be fair to him.
Dare I say this? You think he was a virgin when he married Victoria Coren?
I was wondering that. I think he might have been.
It's possible, well, isn't it? It's not an absurd thing to think.
This is only based on things he said.
I think it could have. I think it could have. He could have loosened him up a little bit.
Niall, I'm just going to interject in here and say, being a big Oasis fan didn't mean you lost your virginity any earlier. I can attest to that.
Yeah, okay. All right. But maybe you might have laid back and enjoyed the parties better, even if you weren't writing. I do think it's just condemning it as being, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing, but just condemning it as being ladsy and therefore problematic misses a point that there are some lads who are ladsy already and probably don't need to be provoked further into ladsiness. But there are some lads that are very timid and maybe something that can drag them out a little bit into ladsiness is maybe not the worst thing in the world.
That's probably what it was for me because I didn't play football or anything. That was always the issue that I had from the very start that I could never really shake off was that if I knew Kurt Cobain at school, I would have liked him. He reminded me of friends I had at school. Liam Gallagher would have fucking pushed me against the urinal when I tried to pee and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He would have, like, at football, he would have tripped me up. Like, he would have been that dickhead, you know.
He's still that dickhead.
Yeah, he is. Like, I remember reading a thing that Graham Coxon from Blur said that there was some pub in London... Because Blur were just a little bit before Oasis and they were kind of big. And there was a pub in London that all the bands used to drink in. He said like the week that the Gallaghers moved to London was fucking awful. Like he said he was in this pub that he went to every night of his life that was down the street from his flat with fellas from like Suede and these kind of bands. And he said he was peeing and the door of the bathroom like swung open and hit the wall and Liam Gallagher came in. All right, you know, all that stuff. And Graham Coxon was at a urinal and Liam literally pushed him so that like he peed on his trousers or whatever. And Graham Coxon was just like, oh, here we fucking go now with these lads. Like, you know. So I was kind of one of those meek lads who like this kind of probably did do me a little bit of good, but it didn't change everything. Like
it probably did fucking do you a little bit of good, Dan. There's probably a whole generation of lads for whom it did a little bit of good. But now probably there's as many lads for whom it did a little bit of bad. But swings and roundabouts, isn't it?
I feel like I went at this all guns blazing. I'm going to... good things about Oasis, right? Obviously the songs.
Oh, do you have a list?
No, I don't have it written down. I'm just off the top of my head. You got the songs, right?
Go for it.
So, like we were saying earlier, he's got this... like he tapped into that kind of acid house, football terraces... Beatly kind of choruses, big, you know, like he basically spent the 90s trying to outdo the Na 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 chorus in Hey Jude, pretty much like big euphoric sing along, hug the person next to you kind of music. I said maybe I don't really want to know, and you got it wrong, cause I just want to fly lately. Yeah. Another good thing is they were really funny. Like, him and Liam are very funny. I would say Noel especially, because he's, I don't know, like, he's just like, he's got opinions on stuff. But Liam is just sort of got this weird psychedelic humor that's just like, they're both very funny. Funny lads.
Okay.
They were popular, which meant that this stuff was in the popular culture. As for someone like me, learning how to play the guitar, which I was doing slightly before I knew who Oasis were, when I started listening to them, I was like, oh, I can play this stuff. This is like, especially when you, like, you play a guitar as well, Niall. You know, like, when you see that Wonderwall, those Wonderwall chords, where your third and fourth finger just stay in one place the whole time you're playing the song. It's just like, well, I can fucking do that. Like, look at that. Like,
I remember you playing those in college.
Yeah, yeah. You got great mileage out of them. And do you remember Eugene we were at college with?
Yeah.
I remember him telling me that, like, when he had an electric guitar. He was a little bit older than me, and he was saying that you could sound like Noel Gallagher at home with your guitar. You just had to turn everything up all the way, and as soon as you played those strings, you just sounded like exactly like an Oasis CD, you know, because especially when you listen to Definitely Maybe on headphones, it's like listening to a recording of a chainsaw or something. Like, it's, you know, it's just like, you know, the whole way through it. It was this big sound that was easily replicated if you were learning music. I always kind of equate Noel Gallagher with Quentin Tarantino a little bit, because when Tarantino came out, he'd be like, oh, I love, you know, like all those revenge films that went into Kill Bill, and I loved it. I'm a big fan of Taxi Driver, this and that. So Tarantino would mention these things and you go out and find them. It's the same with Noel Gallagher, like, where he was like the beginning of Don't Look Back in Anger is obviously fucking Imagine. And Supersonic, there's bits of Supersonic that are basically My Sweet Lord, and Cigarettes and Alcohol is Get It On by T-Rex.
Supersonic, so, and My Sweet Lord.
Absolutely. Compare the intro riff to, if I have the wherewithal at all, I'll join them up on the podcast here and you'll hear it. Like the little, start of My Sweet Lord that goes, it's basically the guitar solo in Supersonic. You know, it was all these little nods and references that you were like, it made you go and seek out that stuff, getting educated through them, which is always cool, you know.
That is really cool. It was just an interesting documentary in its own right, then. I have to say, I really liked it.
I love the mother.
Yeah, yeah, she's great. But man, they were all so Irish, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, like, she's just like, I wouldn't have liked I wouldn't have liked Liam to be in a band without Noel. Now I wouldn't have liked that.
Yeah,
you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, like, you can tell that she's very funny as well. And said about the dad, she was saying, I left him a cup and a spoon and a saucer, and I think I still left him too much.
And I couldn't get over it. They had quite a fair bit of them in Ireland.
Oh, there's a whole section of the documentary. Yeah, that's that gig I was telling you about the one in the point.
I was thinking that.
And they had the little clip of an interview. Because I saw that in the States in the cinema in the States when it came out, Supersonic. And to be in a fucking cinema in America and Dave Fanning's voice coming on, it was like, oh, this is fucking weird.
Does Dave still be on the radio?
He does Saturday mornings, I believe. I still blame him and Unine Fitzsimons for my poor academic career, because when I should have been studying for my Leaving Cert, I was listening to four solid hours.
Yeah, the hard ones for the hard ones, Dan.
Yeah.
And sometimes it wants Dave Fanning.
One of his shows one night, he played a song, I forget what it was, he played some song and he just went, oh, I haven't heard that in ages. I really enjoyed that. And he just went, I'm playing that again. And he just put it back on.
Dave Fanning could get away with that because he had his legion of followers like yourself.
Was among them. And fucking Christmas Eve, the Fanning's Fab 50 would be on every year.
What was that?
It was like his listeners would vote for the best 50 tunes ever, and like he would play them.
Was it different every year?
There'd be mainstays. There'd be a lot, like, I think fucking Smells Like Teen Spirit was usually number one, but he would take votes from listeners as to what the top, I think it was the Fab 50, the top tunes of all time.
Makes sense.
And over Christmas week, he would play them all. That's just what his show would be, which is working his way through the Fab 50.
Oh, that's cool.
Because John Peel did something similar. But one year, Stairway to Heaven was number one. And John Peel, I haven't heard it or anything. I've only read about it apparently on the radio. John Peel was basically like, what the fuck is wrong? It's Stairway to Heaven, really? Is that where we're all at right now? Apparently, he was really annoyed that his listeners picked Stairway to Heaven as the best song of all time.
If I've said it once, I've said it a million times, Dan. Democracy doesn't work. You need a strong man who'll take it back to Europe and tell those bureaucrats in Brussels, we will not be listening to Stairway to Heaven, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I haven't heard Fanning on the radio now in a long time. I've subscribed to the podcast in spirit. I don't actually download any of them, but the subscription's there, you know.
Neve got me an amazing birthday card. Made me, because she like works in a printer. It's Alan Partridge doing a stance, and it just says, "Happy birthday." Not my words, Niall. The words of Stevie Wonder.
And she printed it up for you. That's cool.
What's the story with next week? Well, you suggested something during the week, though, that I thought was a really good idea.
Bren
was in touch.
Listener Bren sent us a clip because for some reason we were talking about possible US remakes of Only Fools and Horses.
Yes.
And apparently there was one.
Yeah, who would have thunk it?
I haven't looked at the actual footage. I've just read the article that was there. So
you were saying we could do American remakes.
Watch a few of these American remakes. We can make like a list because there's the Only Fools and Horses one. There's a couple of ones of Red Dwarf. There's at least one full one on YouTube. Like, obviously, we don't want to load ourselves up with 6 hours of stuff to watch or anything, but
no.
What else is there?
Well, there's plenty. There was a Porridge one, but what is Alf Garnett's one called? Till Death Us Do Part?
I think that might be an example of the American one being better.
Because I've seen both of those. I really like All in the Family. All in the Family in America is a remake of Alf Garnett. I don't like Alf Garnett, but All in the Family is brilliant.
If I'm not mistaken, Sanford and Son is some kind of remake of Steptoe.
Over the weekend, I will contact you, Dan. And we will figure out what we're gonna watch. But we're gonna do an American remake episode.
And for anyone listening, if you wanna fucking sing along at home, yeah, we'll put it up on Facebook what we're actually doing.
Yes. Thanks, Bren, for shouting that out. We'll find this. I wanna see what they do and what they don't do.
It was late, right? It was 2000 or something, wasn't it? According to the article, it was a late remake. Like it's weird that they're only getting around to it now.
I think it was later than that. Like it was around 2011, was it, or 2000? Yeah, it was very long.
Yeah, you just think if you're going to do it, why would you wait until it was completely finished in England?
Maybe like, Only Fools and Horses. Like I think you said it last. I think it was more of a sleeper hit than people care to remember. Fools and Horses. We kind of think of it as this like comedy juggernaut now that just everybody watches all
when you
the
watch
time.
The first couple of series, like there's some fucking howlers of episodes, like really bad episodes, you know.
Is there? I love those early ones.
Like if you think of it, I think there's at least 3 series with Grandad in it. So that's what, 18 episodes? They're not all good.
Dan, I'd be fucking willing to put down money that says they're way more good than bad.
It's a long time since I've done the whole run because I do have the big box with all the DVDs in it.
You bollocks. Listen, we will put it up. We'll put up what we're watching. But that's what I want to do. I think that was a really good idea. I think we should do that. I think we should do an American remix episode.
We will let everybody know how we're doing that. We'll put it up on the Facebook page. So check it, you know, after this episode goes out and you'll see exactly what we're doing. Or just wait and just hear us yammer on about, you know, whatever it's called, the guys from Van Nuys or something.
Dan, you can accuse me of many things, but I never claimed this was appointment podcasting. Just fucking wait. It'll be out when it's out.
There's not enough of that in the world now. It's just like, look, you'll get it eventually. Just fucking leave me alone.
Yeah. Why do you even want it? Ask yourself that, sir, before you start shaking your fist at your podcatcher.
Oh, man. All right, so that was the Supersonic episode. You were actually defending Oasis more in this episode than I was, but the super like fans them. Are always the ones that are like, meh.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know you love them.
I'm not even meh in the documentary itself. I'm meh in the cunts in their 40s banging on. That's what I'm meh in.
They're not worth it. No, take it easy, Dan. Good night to you.
Good night to all. And thanks very much for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks from now with our American remix episode. So that's something to look forward to.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it already.
See you.
Good luck, all.